When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi, I'm Tom Daly, and this is Made With Love. As a pro diver, I thought I knew all about making the thing you love the thing you do. But en route to the Olympic podium, I found a new passion outside of the pool that helped me unlock my power within it. That passion was knitting. And you may think this sounds bonkers, but I believe knitting made me an Olympic champion. I've since swapped swimming trunks for slip stitches, pikes for patterns, and chlorine for cables. Knitting is a huge part of my life now, and I'm determined to help others do more of what they love too. So each week, a brilliant guest will be joining me to talk about turning passion into purpose, how they've made the thing they love a central part of what they do, and crucially, what lessons they've learned along the way. Hello and welcome back to Made With Love. It's Tom here, and I know I say this every week, but I am genuinely thrilled to bring you my next guest because her work is making a real difference in this world that we're all sharing. Munro Bergdorf is an activist, model, writer, and broadcaster. In so many ways, she epitomizes the idea that none of us are ever just one fixed and constant thing. And she used this to such beautiful effect. In fact, this is the whole premise of her book, because she believes we all transition. It's what binds us, not what separates us. In 2022, she made history by becoming the first trans woman to be on the cover of Cosmopolitan. And since then, she has also graced the cover of British Vogue and joined the iconic magazine as a contributing editor. Long before that, though, she made her name as a fierce defender of trans rights. She's a UN Women Changemaker, a founding consultant of L'Oréal Paris's UK Diversity and Inclusion Board, and a proud ambassador of transgender youth charity Mermaids. As a person, though, Munro is known for being someone who lifts as she climbs and who is ultimately hopeful about the world, despite some very painful experiences along the way. But where did it all start? How did she find activism? And how has she maintained love for what she does? We're about to find out. Munro, thank you for joining me. It's good to see you.
So good to see you. We always bump into each other at really unexpected times. So
out and about,
out on the town. Yeah. So yeah, it's great to see you. Yeah, thank
it's
you so
good
much
to
for
see
having
you.
Me.
Of course. Well, first of all, I wanted to talk about your amazing new book that you have written, Transitional. Here, look at it. I love the cover of it. It's like so
thank
like
you.
That's gonna like pop on a bookshelf.
Well, I hope so.
And then you on the back, look at you.
Oh, thank you. Green's my favorite color, so you know, color of life and all that.
Color of life, exactly. Why was now the right time for you to write this book?
I think, God, well, I mean, I'm in a really good place now. So I think now is a really good time for it to come out. But I wrote it throughout a really transitional moment in my life. I started the process in 2018, which is almost like 5 years ago. Can you believe that's nuts? And I was going through so much in the media, so much personally. And then obviously going into the pandemic, which is the time that I wrote the majority of the book, that was such a tricky time, to say the least, for all of us.
Yeah.
So I was really having to confront so much about what I've written in the book, about my very eventful life, in isolation. And then coming out of that, I still had to acclimatize, as we all did, with life after the pandemic. And like now, I just feel like a whole different woman, whole different person. So now is the best time for it to come out. But also within the book, I write a lot about what it was like growing up under Section 28, which is something that I think we can both relate to. How old are you?
I'm 28.
Okay, well, yeah. I don't know. My maths isn't very good.
I think
but...
it was like just on the way out.
Yeah, you're on the cusp.
Yeah, because like the thing is, like lots of things are going backwards, like in Florida and with the Don't Say
Gay
bill. Exactly.
We're seeing so much of what happened in the 80s in the UK underneath Margaret Thatcher's government with Section 28, which was some legislation that basically... made it illegal for homosexuality to be promoted or even talked about in schools and in public, which forced my generation of queer people, queer youth, to not be able to talk about our experiences, to basically live in an environment of shame, silence. Yeah, just kind of like a lack of dignity. Mm. You know, it really made so many queer people think that there was something really wrong with us.
Yeah.
And we're just seeing that happen again with trans youth. So I think it's a really important time for it to come out to show that this is the impact that it can have. And this can really set young people back in how they view themselves, but also how they move through the world. And we need to empower kids. We need to show them that they are, you know, good enough as they are, and that there's nothing wrong with being queer, trans, black, anything that, you know, society sees as different.
How did that make you feel growing up through school with all of that to deal with?
Yeah, it was horrible. I mean, I was really, really bullied in school. It was really, really tough. Yeah, it just really made me feel like I was the problem, that homophobia wasn't the problem, because it normalized homophobia. If you demonize queer people, then you make the oppression the normality.
Yeah.
And that's really what we're seeing with regards to how transness is talked about in society. Transphobia is being seen as the normal opinion with a lot of people, and we just can't allow that to happen, because it won't only potentially cause people to lose their lives, it is causing people to lose their lives. We're seeing such elevated statistics with regards to trans youth self-harming or attempting to take their lives, and we can't allow that to be the normality. So I really hope that people read this book and understand that trans people are not an idea. We're not hypothetical, we're real. And when we're pushing against reality, which is what people are doing, and saying, no, trans people aren't real, that, you know, trans women aren't women, you know, we need to look to society, and we need to look to sciences that reflect society. So if biology is your go-to with regards to invalidating trans people, then look to social sciences. And you can't say that people don't exist when they obviously do.
They are existing. Exactly. And something
that have always existed.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing that really resonates with me on the front of your book, it says transitional, in one way or another, we all transition.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about that? Because I feel like that is a really powerful statement for a lot of people to relate to.
Thank you. So I start the book off with that sentiment, and I end it with that sentiment. And I wanted to show that everything in society, in the world, has undergone some form of change. What was a woman 100 years ago is not what a woman is seen as today.
Yeah.
If you were to show a woman 100 years ago what a woman is today, a lot of them would be like, no, this isn't what a woman is. And it's really down to individuality. You know, the way that we understand science, the way that we understand the world, the way that we understand each other, ourselves, is all an evolution. And I think that it's really important that we don't resist change, that we work with it, and that we allow people the dignity and space to express themselves. I talk about how sexuality has changed throughout history and how we need to move with that. So we foster a society that allows people to just live.
Yeah.
Because what's the alternative? If we're constantly saying, no, you don't exist, no, you can't come into these spaces, no, you can't, you know, have kids, no, you can't get married, no, you can't, you can't, you can't, then we're just pushing people out to the fringes. And when we do that, it puts people in harm's way. So really, ultimately, we're advocating for genocide if we do that, because people are going to die. So we need to understand that society does change. And when you resist that, you're really resisting human beings. And you can't do that, because it just, it doesn't end well. We've seen that happen before.
No.
We've seen it happen with, you know, segregation. We've seen it happen with people saying no Jews here, no black people here, no gay people here, no migrants here. And it just never ends well. I don't want to into how it ends, but we know how it ends.
I mean, if you don't research history, like, history always repeats itself.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we as allies be helpful towards the trans community and also within the LGBT community, because that can be fractured in its own way
absolutely.
Also.
And unfortunately it is fractured. You know, we've seen LGB Alliance mm-hmm. rise exponentially, which is really, really disheartening because our struggles are linked.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately the whole crux of queer phobia is that we're all seen as gender traitors.
Yeah.
Gay men are seen as traitors to their gender because they're not attracted to women.
Mm.
Trans people are seen as gender traitors because we don't resonate with the gender that we were assigned at birth. We're all gender traitors in the eyes of, you know, the normative society. So I really think that this book is about togetherness and also recognizing difference in that. We don't need to pretend that we're all the same, but we also need to recognize that we are all the same. We're all humans, but there's difference within that, and that's to be celebrated.
Yeah, I think celebrating those differences is really important. I think even just going back to school, and I remember from school, like, I grew up in a classroom where I had, in primary school, there were 24 girls and there were 6 boys. And I remember the first time I heard the word queer or like someone's calling me gay was when I went into secondary school, when there were older brothers and older siblings being like, oh, you're gay, or like, oh, that's so gay, or that's queer. And that was like a really derogatory term. And what I feel that's really powerful is I feel like, you know, the queer community has taken that derogatory word and like used it as self-empowerment. Do you think that's been a big shift, being able to identify as queer?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
It disarms the people that are trying to shame us. It's so important. I mean, if you look at all words that have been reclaimed by communities, it's empowering because you're taking it away from belonging to the people that are oppressing you. And it's same with, you know, black. I mean, black was seen as, it was a way to uphold whiteness. Mm-hmm. And whiteness in itself is an oppressive structure because it's just accumulating loads of ethnicities that all have a light skin complexion and just saying that these are the people that are, you know, the most deserving of social power. When we reclaim our power for ourselves and use the language that has historically been used to oppress us, I think it's something really joyous. And when you look at like the history of how that happened with HIV and AIDS activists in the 1980s with ACT UP, you understand your history and your lineage and where you've come from. You can look to history to make sure that it doesn't happen again and empower new generations to move the needle forward. So
I've been blown away actually in the last few years where I look back to when I was at school and we weren't taught anything about black history. I grew up in Plymouth and Plymouth is like 98% white.
Yeah.
Like I didn't have any black friends at school and I never understood how systemically racist the UK is.
Yeah.
And just being able to take the time to try and understand, like, I'm never going to understand fully what the experience of you growing up is. But I feel like now people are really trying to start to listen. I don't know if you've noticed the change.
Oh my God, 100%. I think that we're coming on so far. We've got so far to go.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, the issue is systemic. So even if society is moving forward with regards to the people, the way in which people are essentially indoctrinated within the school systems, the way in which businesses are run, in the way that people have access to the services that they need, there's so much that needs revolutionizing. But it's shocking. I mean, the fact that we're still seeing people protesting against what was being enforced in the 80s, you know, we're really seeing kids are now being taught about different family dynamics.
Yes.
Which was the whole reason why Section 28 was imposed in the first place. Because a book was found in a library which was talking about different family dynamics.
Yeah.
And the fact that people are protesting against this now just shows that, you know, we can't be complacent.
Yeah.
Because when we become complacent, it just allows things to happen. So we need to make sure that we don't take things as static.
No, absolutely. My son, Robbie, he's 4 and a half now and he's at school.
Aww.
And I got an email from the school saying just, and I'm assuming it went to everyone and not just me and Lance. We are, I think, the only gay dads in that year group. But we got a letter home saying this term we are going to be talking about different family types, single mums, single dads, same-sex parents, queer families, and teaching the children that they can be whoever they want to be and love whoever they want to love. And it made me kind of emotional to read because I was like, oh my God, if I grew up in that space, how different my life would your life have been different if you weren't under Section 28? Like, imagine just going to school like that.
Absolutely, because people don't realize that it's not just that you can't teach about it. If you can't teach about homosexuality, you can't say that homophobic bullying is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes into all sorts of territories. Kids can't talk about what they're experiencing because they're forced into an experience of shame. You think that the homophobic bullying that you are experiencing is normal, because you're the wrong one.
Yeah.
So it's really important that we teach kids about the way that the world is so that they know that they have a place in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And growing up under that, like I, as a gay man, I look back on my school and the way that I was taught that I was the wrong one. I was the one on the outside, or the one that shouldn't have fit in. And, you know, I've had to deal with all kinds of my own trauma that brought with all of that, like how difficult it was. Like, how have you been able to stay like mentally resilient through all of that?
Well, I haven't always.
Mm.
And I talk about that in the book, and it really weighs very, very heavily on you. I mean, I can't imagine what it was like for you to have to come out in the public eye. That must have been so, so tough.
Mm.
And thank God that I didn't have to do that. But I, you know, the fact that we even need to come out is, you know, is tough. Because I talk about this in the book as well. It's like, what is that? Mm. You're having to, it's not necessarily having to announce that you're gay. You're announcing that you're not straight, not cis.
Yeah, not normal
not
in the
normal,
eyes of the public.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think we just need to really change the whole way that we think and talk about sexuality. And, you know, what are we centering as the norm? What are we, you know, saying to new generations about who they should be in the future?
Mm.
But I haven't always been mentally resilient. I think the obstacles and the trauma has made me resilient in the end, but I shouldn't have had to go through that. You know, my resilience should be through empowerment and through people showing me that I'm enough as I am, not me having to figure it out from constantly being belittled, berated and torn down.
And I think lots of people think that you just come out once. And I don't know if you find this, but you find yourself coming out in certain ways every day.
Mm-hmm.
Like whether you're having a conversation with a taxi driver and they ask about your family, or like, oh, is your wife at home? And I'm like, well, no, I don't have a wife. And having to explain that every day. Like, do you find yourself in the same position?
I do. I do. I find, you know, a lot of people just assume that I just find men attractive because I think a lot of people think that there's like a proximity within, you know, of trans women, that they're doing it for a reason, whether or not it's, you know, the far right's idea that we're doing it to enter women only spaces, or we're doing it to deceive men, or we're doing it for anybody apart from ourselves.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people are, not a lot of people, but when I have conversations with people and I say that I'm bisexual or pansexual, I think that they're just like, well, how does that work? And
yeah.
Like, because I fall in love with people.
Yeah.
There's nothing really else to it.
And I think also within the queer community, we often, you know, there's the LGBTQIA+, like there's so many different people within that that may go by different labels or may not want labels at all.
Mm.
I think it's also, there's the sexual orientation side and then there's the gender identity side within that community, but we often all get lumped under the same bracket. Mm. Now, would you be able to talk a bit on the differences between sexual orientation and gender identity?
So sexual orientation, sexuality is your sexual feelings. Mm. So it's who you're attracted to. It's not what you do. Mm. You can be queer and not have sex, or you can be queer and in a heterosexual relationship but not be heterosexual.
Yeah.
And gender identity is how you see yourself and your gender and your gender, mm-hmm. How you express that gender identity, how you feel again. So these are both feelings. That's why it's frustrating when people want to separate that, because at the end of the day, we're all being stigmatized for our feelings. Mm-hmm. It's not really about whether or not you choose to transition. You're still trans even if you don't transition. You're still queer even if you don't act on your feelings. I think that a lot of it is really reductive in saying that we are the product of our actions. Mm-hmm. We're not necessarily always. We are the product of what's going on inside, and how we express that is our sexuality and our gender identity.
Absolutely. And going back to your childhood, like, what were your dreams and aspirations then? Like, what made you tick?
Oh, God, I had so many dreams when I was a kid. Mm. I wanted to be a different thing every week. But eventually it all just boiled down to fashion. Mm. Fashion just seemed like a real space where I could be as creative as I wanted to be. I didn't know what I wanted to do in fashion. It ranged from photography to a journalist, yeah, to modeling to designing. And I've kind of had my finger in all of the different pies, mm, and I worked my way up. I started in fashion in 2010.
Wow.
And I was working in fashion PR. And then I left, and then I started DJing, and then I also worked in a magazine. I worked as a stylist assistant, photography assistant. So I kind of worked my way up, and then I started modeling, and then decided to incorporate activism, mm, into it, because I just thought there's no point in me being part of this unless I am using this, mm, platform, because there were so few trans people in the industry anyway. And I often found myself being shut out of spaces. Mm. So, yeah, I really just thought it was a great opportunity.
I mean, you say there were few trans people in those spaces. Like, did you have any, I mean, you're a trans icon now for so many, oh, trans youth growing up, like, of what you've been able to achieve. I mean, author, podcaster, model, activist, there's so much you do. Did you have any trans icons or role models to look up to when you were growing up?
Not when I was growing up, but kind of. When I was 18, I mean, it's a while ago.
No, yesterday.
But yeah, I don't really think it was until I was 18 that I started, mm, looking at other trans women without the aspect of shame, because I only really knew transness as tragedy. Mm. I hadn't really had access to anything else to tell me otherwise, really. I remember when I was growing up, and you know, there was Hayley Cropper on Coronation Street, who was a lovely character, great actress, but she wasn't trans, and also she was in her mid to late 30s, so wasn't really that relatable to me as, you know, a young, mm, mixed race kid who was also kind of like aware that there was something different, but not having the language to put my finger on it.
Yeah.
Like, if I had the option of just being a girl like that, then I would take it.
Yeah.
But I didn't have the language to understand where those feelings were rooted. And then there was Nadia from Big Brother, who was iconic.
Yes.
Stunning, love, and incredible, yeah, and so funny. And she captured the imagination and love and the hearts of the nation. But when she came out of the Big Brother house, she was torn to shreds and, mm, like, outed as being an ex-sex worker. And I was just like, whoa, God, like, I don't want that for myself. And then I just instantly attached that to being trans, not the transphobia.
Yeah.
And then there was Miriam Rivera, who was in a TV show called There's Something About Miriam, which was kind of like The Bachelorette, but guys would compete for her love, not knowing that she was trans. And then at the end, it was revealed that she was trans, and then all of the men sued the producers for conspiracy to commit sexual assault. So all of these things were just telling me that there was something very wrong. Wow. About being trans, and I internalized it and I shut it out. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
And then once I got to university, I started meeting trans people. And I was like, there are so many possibilities and I don't need to be scared of myself. And I realized that I was scared of the potential of, you know, just not being loved. I was scared of all of these hypotheticals that weren't true. There was just lies that I'd internalized as my own voice. So, yeah, it's really important that we have access to community. I think that that's what I learned from that. I didn't actually answer your question. Sorry, I went off on a tangent.
You're all right.
But the first time that I saw trans people on screen that I resonated with was Octavia St. Laurent on Paris is Burning. And that was when I was 18. And I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
People can be trans and experience joy. We can have our own family dynamics. We can have dreams. We can achieve them. We can, you know, just be ourselves and move through the world in the daytime.
Yeah.
And like all of these things that people take for granted. And yeah, so that was the very first time that I saw a trans woman on screen that I could see myself in.
And there are more like TV shows. I mean, like Pose, which is based on Pose, but also like more mainstream places are recognizing trans success. I mean, we look at the Grammys with Kim Petras and Sam Smith, you doing amazing work, trailblazing work in what you're doing. And when you first met a trans person, was it at university to be able to have those conversations?
Well, knowingly, I'm sure that I met many trans people and didn't even realize it, but consciously, my first trans friend, at university, and I met her, I write about her in the book. We meet at an after party, a naughty after party after the club. And and she was just standing by the window and the sun was like blazing through and she just looked like such a goddess. And someone came up to me and was like, can you believe that that's a... And I was just like, And then I was like, no. And like, I was like, I'm pretty sure you shouldn't use that word. And then I was just like, wow, she's gorgeous. And I realized that I just internalized so much negativity about what being trans is. And that, yes, you don't need to be beautiful to be a trans woman. It's not what it's about. But it was just about the fact that she was just so bold and stunning in more ways than visual.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, you haven't let life eat you up. You've really made it work for yourself. And I need to do this for me too.
How was that, having those initial conversations, knowingly speaking to a trans person? Was that the first time you were able to start to air some of your feelings yourself?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It was like a little secret that we had. She knew that I was trans before I even said.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
She knew. It's always been obvious, to be honest. And I think so many people knew. But she just kind of just held up a mirror. And I was just like, it took a long time for me to start my journey because I had so many questions. There was so much that I was working through. I had really poor mental health at university and I was struggling with eating disorders and substance abuse and just like lots of stuff that had happened in my childhood that I hadn't processed. I was just running away from a lot of things. And a lot of it was rooted in my gender identity. Not necessarily in my gender identity, but shame around my gender identity. So having that friendship really helped me to deal and confront with a lot of things. And it's so important. It's why it's so important that we all have access to community, regardless of how we identify. It's important that we're surrounded by people who we can see ourselves in and that encourage us to be who we are rather than to hide who we are.
And that's as well, like the importance of like having queer safe spaces as well to be able to go to. I know we go to places and had our moments, our boogies. So it's like having those spaces are all the more important to be able to meet like-minded people, like people that are like going through the same things, have had the same childhood traumas, like whether it's on varying scales. But
yeah,
sounds to me like meeting that friend was really what enabled you to accept yourself.
Yeah.
And is that like, I know for me, when I came out, I was so terrified. I had everyone telling me, you're going to lose all your sponsorship. You're never going to have any fan base again. Okay. And I just got to a point where I was like, you know what? I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. I was in such a dark space and everything was a struggle. I like quit diving. I didn't know what I was going to do. And I suddenly met my now husband and was like, he for me was like, oh, this isn't just like a sexual fantasy of mine. This is who I am.
Yeah.
Like I can actually fall in love with someone
and
imagine happiness on the other side of that. It's like, the pursuit of happiness for me was in that relationship. And it was almost like everyone else's opinions, I couldn't give a rat's ass about.
Yeah.
It was like, you know what? Like, if you don't like it, lump it. Like, I'm going to be me. And that coming out moment was so terrifying, but then at the same time, so liberating. And like, was there a moment for you like that while you were at university? Because I'm not quite sure when you officially decided that you wanted to start your...
Yeah, it was a long road for me. But she was the spark. And I think sometimes you just need that spark to set you on your way. And it wasn't until I was 23 that I started hormones. And then I stopped because I freaked out. I was like,
oh, really?
What are these things? They came up quicker. I didn't have any adjustment time. But yeah, so I stopped for like 6 months and I was like, no, wait a minute. Wait a minute. This is right. I just wasn't ready. And then I think it was around the age of 24, within that 6 month period, that I just started it. And I never looked back after that. But yeah, it's so important. And I think that's why we need to, you know, meet each other, regardless of who we're meeting, like meet each other as we are. And, you know, recognize that we're all on our own journeys. We're all just trying to do our best.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think the more people that I met, the more possibility I saw.
Yeah.
And yeah, just meeting more trans people. And I said, there's no one way to be trans. What?
Yeah.
So I don't need to just try and like shove myself into this narrow lane about what a trans woman is. I can just be. And I think that's what's been so freeing about seeing the non-binary community become so visible. It's just showing that there is no one way to present your gender identity. It's limitless. And so are the ways that you can express yourself and the way that you can define yourself. And ultimately, is no one's business.
Exactly.
It's just for us to define.
That's what I never understood. I was like, what? How does it affect you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on. Like, everyone here is just trying to live. Everyone's just trying to do the best that they can. Like, has that been a frustrating thing for you to be able to feel seen and feel validated in, like, in your own existence?
Yeah. Because transitioning is so visual. Mm-hmm. When someone comes out as trans, it just invokes so many opinions because it's just right there. With sexuality, it's almost like it's easier to be in the closet.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, I think a lot of people just see sexuality as what you do rather than how you feel and who you are as a person. But then when you're like transitioning and it's so visual, people have opinions on it. People love to ask you a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Often that you don't have the answers to yourself. A lot of people have opinions about what being trans is when they're not trans themselves. So it's very, very difficult and it's quite undignifying a lot of the time. The whole process of transitioning is very undignified in this society, in this environment that we are in. Our healthcare system is in freefall. We are having to often prove to people who aren't trans that are medical professionals that we're trans.
Really?
By their definitions of what being trans is.
Yeah. What do you have to prove? Like if you're...
Well, in the initial sense, you go to your GP, who often isn't trans, to say that I am trans. And then they refer you to a psychiatrist and then they're often not trans, having to say, please refer me to the gender identity clinic. Then you go to the gender identity clinic and then they're not trans. Ugh. And then to get a gender recognition certificate, you need to prove your transness to a panel of medical professionals who aren't trans. And then, you know, we're having legislation be formed on our lives by people in government who aren't trans. So it's very, very frustrating how little we're consulted about forming this legislation, forming policies that have an impact on our everyday lives. And then when policy is passed, as what we saw in Scotland, to help make our lives easier, it's blocked because it's said that it's in direct competition or direct conflict with equality laws, when we know that it's not.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I'd love to talk to you a little bit more about like your work and all of the things that you do. And, you know, you said you started off more as the like as fashion assistant behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And then you got launched in front of the camera, if you like. Like, how was that whole experience?
It was really interesting. My first big campaign was for a brand called Uniqlo, which was shot by Rankin, actually. Really great. And then I started working with Nick Knight, who is another one of my big fashion heroes. And then I got shot by David Bailey. So I was working with some really, really big photographers right at the beginning of my career, but I wasn't really allowed to say that much until Uniqlo.
Yeah.
And in that, I got to really express my thoughts about being trans in London, which is probably one of the best places to be trans in the UK. We've got a great mayor who is really pro-trans and fights for better safety for trans people and public transport, which we've seen can be a contentious area for people. I mean, I've been spat at
on
public transport. I've been sexually assaulted, harassed on public transport, followed home. So, you know, trans people really do face a whole series of issues on public transport. And it's really important that we understand the lived experiences. And again, like in this book, that's why I wrote it, because we're constantly hearing about trans people, but a lot of people don't know what it's like to be trans. Mm. So if we're fighting constantly to push people out of spaces, then we're really harming people.
Absolutely. And I know that you were also face of a campaign for L'Oreal. I want to just list some of the things that you've done. Your first trans person on the cover of Cosmo, is that correct? And you also did the cover of Vogue in September 2020. Mm-hmm. Like some amazingly iconic things.
Thanks.
But what was it that made you not just want to model and stay behind the scenes and then become such an incredible activist for not just the trans community, but also against racism in this country and beyond?
I don't really know. I think I really started with activism because it was a way for me to express some of the frustrations that I felt with society. And then with fashion, you know, what other industry are women and gay men at the helm?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
I know.
Making the decisions. Yeah. So it really felt like a space where I could bring some change.
Yeah.
And trans women have been inspiring the fashion industry for time.
Yes.
And we've been here, you know, looking back at all of the catwalks and shoots that I was inspired by. I didn't even realize it, but trans women were right there.
Yeah.
You know, Connie Girl was walking for Mugler. Mm-hmm. There was Tracy Africa on the cover of hair dye boxes for Revlon. There was, you know, Andrea Pajic was like challenging ideas about androgyny, and you know, we've been there, but a lot of opportunity just hasn't been there.
Yeah.
So very few and far between. And I just thought, if I've got this opportunity and if my platform's building, do I just want to take it for myself, or do I actually want to use this as a platform to use what I'm passionate about, which is activism, and also use it to educate people? That makes my life easier in the long run, but also it makes other people's lives easier too. And I've never wanted to just be the only one, you know. What a lonely life.
No, exactly.
So if I can help facilitate change and foster change, then I won't be the only one.
Yeah.
We can, like, you know, bring the community into the industry. And I hope that I've helped to do that.
Absolutely.
There's so many people that have, you know, fought for me to be able to have these opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I'm so, so, so thankful. Like, you know, Octavia St. Laurent in Paris is Burning, I'm pretty much living her dream.
Mm.
But I wouldn't have the gall and the gumption to go for it if I hadn't have seen her.
Yeah.
So we're really passing the baton consistently. And then I'll get so far by the end of my life, and then I'll pass the baton.
Yeah.
And then there'll be, you know, more trans girls going for their dreams. I mean, I did on my MTV show, we had a guest, Yasmin Finney from Heartstopper. And she said that I was the first trans woman that she saw on television that she could see herself in. And you know, like, that just means so much to me, because she's obviously inspiring a whole new generation.
Yeah.
I just think it's beautiful how we can inspire each other and just progress things.
Yeah. It's so interesting when you say about everyone behind the scenes, and the queerness behind the scenes that gets suddenly seen on the big screen. And like, I just think about, you look back into like rock and roll in like the 70s and the 80s, and like, the people behind that, like, you know, the rock and roll artists that are out there with like makeup and long hair, and being able to just be like really express themselves through fashion. I think it's something that's really quite amazing, to be honest. One thing I wanted to talk to you about as well was trans pride and how that is starting to build momentum, right? And how important is it to you for everyone to show up for all minorities?
It's so important. It's so, so, so important. Trans pride is one of the most amazing things to come out of our community recently. I love it.
Yes.
And the fact that more and more people come every single year, and, you know, the big proportion of it are allies.
Yeah.
The trans community are 0.5% of the population.
Yeah.
We're tiny and we need support. We need allyship. You know, there's so many different ways to be an ally. And I think it's really about just utilizing what you're good at, whether or not that's access, or whether or not that's art or organization. Funds.
Yeah.
You could use your platform, you know, spotlight people, mentorship. There's so many different ways to be an ally, and it's not just limited to, you know, time and money.
Yeah.
I think it's really about harnessing your skill set, seeing activism as a machine, and everybody playing different parts. Because if we're all just doing the same thing, and if we're all just seeing activism as taking to the streets, that is important, but that's only just a tiny part about what's going to bring out the change.
No, exactly. I've always been away for Trans Pride, but like, hopefully I'm here this year.
And let's go together.
I know. And I was like, you were like saying, oh, like, you got to do something that you're good at with it. I was like, I'll knit you a dress.
Yes. A Tom Daley original.
Yeah, exactly. Tom Daley original dress.
In the Trans Pride colours.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That would be, I mean, that's the thing though. Like, I feel like building those bridges between communities is so important, because as soon as you start having, you know, divides and fractures within the LGBT community, it's like we're fighting against our own. Like, we want to be able to lift everyone up, because I think if we think that the government is just going to stop at trans rights, like, we have got a whole nother thing coming. Like, look at history, how it repeats itself. It's important to be there.
It's absolutely important to be there. It's, you know, if you are listening to this and you want to come to London Trans Pride, look up London Trans Pride on Instagram. There's obviously protests throughout the year because, you know, UK Tories, but it's also a really joyous event, I think. And the march is beautiful, goes through central London, and it's just really, really energizing. And I think it just brings it back to what Pride should be. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, what has come to be known as gay Pride, which should be LGBT Pride, has become quite corporate and complacent, yep. as so many of our community have accessed privileges within mm-hmm. society. But at its heart, Pride is a protest, and I think that it should really be honoured as such.
Yeah. So when you say Pride being protest, like, how do we take those Pride protests and create real, tangible change?
Oh, God. Well, I mean...
a loaded question, but...
yeah, I think, you know, it's a starting point, really. I think that, you know, it depends on, like, what protest, what Pride you're going to. But with the speeches, especially at London Trans Pride, I think that that's really time to take stock about the different ways in which transphobia is impacting mm-hmm. the community. I think that seeing Pride as more than a party mm-hmm. is a great starting point. Yeah. I think going to talks, going to speeches, understanding the different ways in which you can, you know, show up if you're an ally to the community. Protest is really about disruption and making noise. But again, it's a starting point.
Yeah.
It needs to be going into everything. I think you need to take what is being talked about at the protest and what is being protested, and look at how it's being implemented in the world around you.
Yeah.
Look at how the policies of your workplace are functioning. Yeah. Look at how the syllabus of your school is being taught.
Mm-hmm.
Look at how, you know, even in your immediate community, about who's being taunted or teased, who is struggling, and try to help them get the help that they need. I think it's really about understanding that this isn't just happening over there, it's happening everywhere.
Yeah, no,
and
absolutely.
We can be the ones to change it.
And what does activism bring to you personally?
It brings me satisfaction in knowing that I'm purpose to my community. Mm-hmm. I, you know, sometimes feel a little like it weighs heavy on my shoulders because not a lot of trans people get the opportunities that I do. And I really try to spotlight other people to make sure that, you know, people are aware of the work that they're doing, especially people who don't have big followings that are helping to change legislation that's impacting our lives, like Good Law Project, like, you know, Lady Phil, who runs UK Lovely. Black Pride, incredible. Yeah. And not just trans people, but like people that are facilitating safe spaces for us as mm-hmm. well, so that other trans people can meet each other and access community that we all deserve. You know, there's Chase Strangio, who is pushing against so many of the anti-trans bills in America, especially, you know, the Don't Say Gay bills as well. So I just think it's really just, it's just so important to me.
Yeah.
I just want to leave this world better than I found it. And yeah, I don't want younger people to go through what I went through.
Mm. Yeah, no, I like, and I know I can appreciate how much, like you say, it weighs on you as an activist, because I think that's one of the reasons why LGBT people in sport don't often come out, is because if you come out and you're already in the public eye, there's almost this pressure on you to be an activist and fight for those changes. So yeah, I can understand how that's been incredibly, you know, weighing on you.
Yeah.
Before we get onto the Made with Love letter,
uh-huh.
what would you consider to be your greatest achievement?
Oh, wow. My greatest achievement is just living as myself and getting to, I guess, like happiness.
Yeah.
Because it hasn't always been a given, and it really has been able to blossom under the most tough circumstances, and I really fought for it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I wake up happy and I go to bed happy, that's an achievement for me.
Yeah.
Just because I've had so many struggles with mental health, with, oh God, I don't want to list them. Read the book. Buy the book.
Exactly. Get it.
There's been a lot of struggles.
Yeah.
So I think it's really a miracle that I'm A, happy, and B, alive.
Yeah. No.
So, you know, happy and breathing
Good.
Are my biggest achievements. I mean, there's been, you know, I'm in a very, very fortunate position to say that there's been more blessings professionally than I can count. Mm-hmm. And I feel very, very, very proud of them because it hasn't just been for me, you know, to be the first trans woman on Cosmopolitan, to be the first Black British trans woman on the cover of Vogue, and to, you know, speak at the UN, to work with the UN, to be a contributing editor of British Vogue.
Yeah.
You know, all of these things I don't take lightly because often I'm the first. I don't see it as like, right,
I'm
the first, that's it. Yeah. I'm like the door mm-hmm. for other people to come in.
Yeah.
And because it's been done before, I'm setting a precedent.
Yeah.
And it's not about me necessarily. It's about us. And yeah. I want other people to be like, well, she did it, so can I.
Yeah.
I did that, so someone else can do that, and then someone else can do it, and then someone else can do it, and then it's a wave.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the amazing thing, like the gratitude that other people are going to have for you, like paving the way in that way, like you have gratitude for the people that came before you. I guess that leads me on to the Made with Love letter. Mm-hmm. So each guest at the end of the podcast, I ask them to either write a letter, say a little bit about a person, mm-hmm. place, or a thing that has made them with love, like a little token of gratitude. Mm. So I would love for you to talk a little bit about that person, place, or thing.
Okay. Oh, wow. I would like to write a letter to my English lecturer. Why is it with queers and English?
I know
teachers?
All the English teachers.
What is
I know.
It with it?
My English teacher used to give me a classroom to lock myself in during lunchtime when people used to throw things at me at lunchtime.
I had no friends.
Yeah, I know.
I just went into the classroom and read British Vogue so I didn't have to read in the toilet cubicle. Anyway, so Dr. Jess Moriarty, thank you so much. And I know that you're listening to this because you're my biggest fan. Thank you so, so much for seeing that I was struggling and also showing me that I didn't have to. A little context for the listener. I had quite severe anorexia at university, and I was also just punishing myself unnecessarily because I didn't want to confront a lot of the things that really were actually a source of power that I'd been told was not normal. And I felt very, very ashamed. But I just wanted to say thank you, Jess, for showing me that I didn't have to own that pain, that that pain wasn't mine to have. It was a symptom of a society that is very sick. And I just want to say thank you. I want to show some love for the fact that I could take that pain and I could turn it into something positive. And hopefully that's what I've done. I truly believe that without your love and support, and also fostering some discipline in me to show that this is my life and this is my future and that I need to fall in love with it. And I'm truly, truly grateful. So thank you so much.
Oh, we love you. We love Jazz. That's so...
Yeah,
that's,
she's incredible.
That's amazing.
I feel a little teary now.
Oh, no, that was so special. And like, she's going to hear that and be so like... blown away. It's gonna be amazing. But I have a little something for you to close out the episode, and I have two here. I think
what's this?
So at the end of each episode, when I see people in person, I like my passion and the thing that I love to do every day is knitting.
Yeah.
And you're passing on like experiences to other people. So I have a little knit kit for you.
Oh my god.
I mean, you may not be able to knit. But we can have a little knit club. And so.
Oh my God, look at me.
I know. So it's a little knit kit to make your own little hat.
Am I holding it like chopsticks?
You know, you can use them as chopsticks if you're not going to knit as well. So when you're having your sushi, ooh, you've got it.
You know, this is the good wool.
Oh, yeah, it's
the
good wool.
It's that good Tom Daly wool.
Oh, yes. Yeah, 100% merino there.
Oh, amazing. Ooh,
lovely, lovely.
So, yeah. Thank you so much, darling.
Everything in there you need to make your own lovely little hat. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you. Just before you go, what are your hopes for the future to close it out?
Hope for my future, more balance, I think.
Yeah.
I've just got my fun back.
Yeah.
I really lost it after the pandemic. I think a lot of us did.
Yeah.
In not really knowing how to be in public and not knowing how to function in this new world, but I've got it back.
Good.
And we've seen each other out. We've had fun together.
Oh yeah, we've been doing it.
Yeah, I think just, you know, recognizing that I am not an idea. I'm not just an activist. I'm not just a model. I'm not just anything. I can do it all. And, you know, just balancing it all and just taking life.
Bergdorf getting her balance back. All the alliteration.
Period.
We love it. We love it. Thank you so much again.
Oh, by the way.
Yeah.
Fun fact.
Go on.
You know that we've got the same last name.
No way. So, really? Spelt the same as well?
Yeah.
That is...
We could be related.
Oh my gosh, imagine.
In some weird way.
I mean, the funny thing is, I really quite often meet lots of Daleys.
Yeah, it's Irish, isn't it?
Yeah. Also, Irish or Jamaican.
Well, I'm Jamaican.
Really? So when I went to Jamaica to do a documentary last year to speak to some queer people living there, and... Yeah, that I met so many Daleys.
It's a real thing. It's obviously through, you know...
Colonial era.
Yeah. But, you know, Miss Dynamite as well, her last name's Daley.
No.
Anna Carla.
Oh my God.
We could all be related.
Imagine. Let's do a family reunion. I love it. Wow, that's a nice, interesting fact. Close it out.
Yeah.
Look at that. Miss Daley. Oh, too much.
I'm
right,
dead.
We need to leave now.
Thank you so much, darling.
Thank you. Thanks again to Munro, but we wouldn't have a podcast if it wasn't for you listening. So a huge thank you to you as well. It was a joy, but we did touch on some big topics today. So if you're struggling with any of this, please know you are never alone. We are all about love on this show, and there is love out there for you. So if you need some help or guidance, there are some links in the show notes to charities that will be able to help you or connect you to wonderful, like-minded people. Made with Love was hosted by me, Tom Daley, produced by Emma Roberts for Spiritland Productions, and our engineer today was Ed Gill. I've got another episode coming your way next week, so I hope you can join me then. Ciao!
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.